The following is a synopsis of the Rebbe's talk of Shabbos Parshas Bahar B'chukesai, in which they blessed the month of Sivan of the year Hei Tinase, corresponding to 1991. One of the central features that describe the way the Jewish people journeyed towards the receiving of the Torah was the events of the first day of the Rosh Chodesh of Sivan. And the Torah describes their coming to Midbar Sinai, the Sinai desert, and after that they received the Torah. Since Midbar Sinai, the desert of Sinai, is connected to the giving of the Torah, Sinai specifically, as it says in the beginning of Pirkei Avos, Moshe kibol Torah mis Sinai, Moshe received the Torah from Sinai, and the Torah was given specifically in a midbar, in a desert, place that is free for all, and the lesson from that is that it is an instruction that every Jew can learn Torah. It's not reserved for one class. That's why when the Jewish people came to Midbar Sinai, that was a marker, an indication that this was the time that the Jewish people could receive the Torah. And therefore, always before the festival of Matan Torah, we read the parsha of Bamidbar Sinai, since the Midbar is the place that is appropriate for the giving of the Torah. And the Rebbe explains that a Midbar is a place that is hefker, it's free for all, it doesn't belong to anyone. It's not a public domain that belongs to everyone, it belongs to no one. That's why the Midrash says, the lesson from this is that the Torah could belong to anyone. Anyone who wants can take it. But the Rebbe asks a question. Why do we describe Torah as belonging to everyone because it was given in a place that belongs to no one? Torah was not made free for all, that we have to acquire it, but it was given from God, from his ownership, as it were, to the ownership of the entire Jewish people. So Torah belongs to every Jew. You don't have to acquire it, even to a child who was just born. So the question is, why was the Torah given in a desert, in a place of hefker, free-for-all place, which belongs to no one, and anyone who wants to take access has to make a kinyan, has to acquire it? It should have been given in a public domain that belongs to everyone, which would have been an apt description of the way Torah belongs to every single Jew. So the Rebbe explains it by first prefacing the other parsha that is connected to Matan Torah, the parsha of Bahar B'chukesai, which we read generally before Rosh Chodesh Sivan. We're told that Ezra instituted that we should read Parshas B'chukesai before Matan Torah because it contains the blessings for the Jewish people if they observe the Torah and the curses if not. But in order to separate between those curses and the festival of Shavuos, that's why they inserted also the reading of Parshas Bamidbar Sinai. So the Parshas of Bahar B'chukesai are connected to Matan Torah, and even the names themselves indicate that connection. Bahar Sinai is the place in which the Torah was given, as we know, and B'chukesai, which comes from a root that means engraved, indicates and represents the 10 statements, the so-called 10 commandments, that are engraved on the two tablets. And they contain, in all of the Judaism, are actually contained within the 10 commandments. So that's the connection of B'chukesai to Matan Torah. Also, when you look at the content of these two parshas, Parshas Bahar begins with enumerating the very small details and specifics of the sabbatical year, and we're taught that all the details were said to Moshe at Mount Sinai. From here, our sages derive that not only this mitzvah of the sabbatical year, but the details of all the mitzvahs were said at Mount Sinai. So that's the content of the parsha, and also the content of Parshas B'chukesai, which ends with the words Eila haMitzvos asher tziva Hashem b'Moshe b'nei Yisrael b'Har Sinai. These are the commandments that God commanded Moses to the Jewish people at Mount Sinai. But these parshas don't mention a thing about Midbar Sinai, the desert of Sinai, just Mount Sinai. So the question is why? If Midbar is so crucial to the understanding of Matan Torah, why is it omitted in this parsha? And we also have to understand in general terms, what's the reason why we're giving some importance to a specific place in which the Torah was given? The Torah has an effect on the whole world, so we have to look at Torah as being universal instead of just focusing on one place, unless we can conclude from this that this place tells us about how the Torah affects the whole world. To understand that, the Rebbe prefaces Pirkei Avos, in Ethics of the Fathers, what we read this Shabbos, we begin with the words, V'asara me'mareis nivra ha'elam. The world was created with 10 utterances. And the Zohar explains that corresponding to the 10 utterances in which the world was created, we have the 10 commandments, or the 10 statements in which the Torah was given, and they sustain that world that was created with 10 utterances. Because the world was created because of the Torah, and in the merit of learning Torah, the world endures. And the Torah is able to bring stability and peace to the world. And one could say that when we learn Torah, indicated, represented by the Ten Commandments, we reveal that in essence, the whole world is not a concealment of its creator. On the contrary, the whole existence of the world comes from the 10 utterances. And if God would remove, God forbid, the 10 utterances from the world for one instant, the whole world would turn into utter nothingness. So the whole world's existence is here to reveal its creator. And the Mishnah continues, the world was created with 10 utterances, but then the Mishnah asks rhetorically, but God could have created the whole world with one utterance. The reason he did it with 10 is to exact punishment from the wicked who destroy a world that was created with 10 utterances, and to give reward to the righteous who sustain the world that was created with 10 utterances. And the question has been asked, if the world could have been created with one utterance, so why would you punish the wicked for destroying something that God didn't even have to do to create it with 10? It's essentially a one utterance creation. And why did the tzaddikim benefit from it if it's not, in essence, the way the world had to be created? However, God didn't just create the world with 10 utterances in order to create a world that could have been created with one utterance. There had to be one utterance that creates the substance of the world, but then there was another dimension of creation that came through the 10 utterances that give us the different forms of that substance and all the details, all the ramifications. And the difference is simple. The creation of the world with one utterance, which is the way God did create the world with one utterance, underscores God's power, that he could create something out of nothing. And we don't focus on the creations themselves, because even as it's created, it has no real existence. It's only God's one utterance, his creative power, that is visible. Then when he creates the world with 10 utterances, that underscores the fact that the world has substance, that the world has importance with all of its details. And these 10 utterances correspond to the 10 general characteristics that comprise all of the different levels that exist in the world. So the Rebbe is saying that the world was created in two ways, with one utterance, which focuses on God's role, and the whole world has no real independent existence. And then we talk about God creating with 10 utterances, where he gives the world its importance and its so-called independence. And the same thing we find with Matan Torah. We have the one utterance and the 10. When it talks about Matan Torah, it says in Tillim, in the book of Psalms, Achas Dibur Elokim. The word Achas Dibur Elokim, God spoke one, but Shtayim Zu Shemaiti, but I heard two. That means on one hand, Torah is God's wisdom, and it's one with God, and it transcends the world. It's one, corresponding to the one utterance with which God creates the world. On the other hand, Torah did descend into this world, and it does relate to people and to the world and to all the details of the world. That's why there are 613 commandments corresponding to the 613 parts of a person, the organs, the limbs, the blood vessels, and so on. That corresponds to the 10 utterances. Now, when you connect to the one utterance of Torah by saying the blessing of Torah, because when you say the blessing of Torah, you're focusing on the Nosein HaTorah, the giver of the Torah. That's how you reveal in the world how the whole world is subordinate and is surrendered and is negated in relation to its creator. And you're focusing on and highlighting the power of God, the creator, to create a world out of nothingness. Now, when you study Torah, afterwards, after you say the blessings of the Torah, and you learn all the details and all the laws in great detail that corresponds to the 10 utterances within Torah, that helps us reveal in the world that all of its existence and all of its details are holy, and all of their function is to reveal the Creator. So, summarizing all of what we just said, the one utterance is what causes bittul, it nullifies and elevates the world, it takes it above the world. The 10 utterances bring the divine down into and sanctifies all of the existence of the world. On the other hand, there's an advantage in the 10 utterances because it sanctifies the world the way the world is down here. But it's a lower level of holiness because it's related to and commensurate with the parameters of the world. When do you have perfection? The perfection is that when the level of divinity that transcends the world also permeates the world. Then you have a world that becomes a dwelling for God himself, the meaning to the divine that is above the world, and that divine dwells within Tachtenim, the lowest existence, which is our physical world. Now these two effects of Torah on the world, the one utterance and the 10 utterances, existed also in the preparations for Matan Torah, which are the holidays of Pesach and the counting of the Omer. In Pesach, God in his glory and essence, who transcends the whole world, revealed himself, descended down here to the Jewish people, but there was no real unification of God's essence as he is above and beyond the world with the world itself and the Jewish people in the way that they were in their own level. However, subsequently, when they counted the Omer, the day after Pesach, the goal was to bring God's essence as it is above the world in a manner that it should illuminate, because the word counting in Hebrew, sfartim, also comes from the word evan sapir, a sapphire, a luminescent stone that gives light. So the idea is that that should bring light into the world. And it's interesting that this year, the year in which the Rebbe said this talk, Tafshin Nun Aleph Tenaseh, the weeks of counting the Omer, which indicate God's essence being revealed, begin on a Sunday, and they end on a Shabbos. That underscores even more that God's essence, in his glory and essence, permeates the world in the normal sequence of the weeks, as they are standardized from Sunday through Shabbos. Now this thought of bringing Atzmus, God's essence, into the world is even more pronounced in the counting of the Omer of Rosh Chodesh Sivan, because then we conclude 6 weeks of the Omer and another 3 days of the seventh week, which correspond to the primary emotional traits of Chesed, Gevurah, and Tiferes. So we have 44 days of the Omer. The reason why we count the Omer, as we said before, is to correct the world and to illuminate the world and the person, and to refine even his negative characteristics. And this has occurred primarily in the first 44 days, which are geared to elevate, to mature, and to correct one's animalistic traits. Just as it says that child is born, the blood eventually develops into and becomes the milk that raises the child, that helps the child grow, that ultimately gives the child the ability to eat on his own. The same thing over here, the 44 in Hebrew is Mem Dalid, read backwards is Dam. The blood of these days is the source of the Torah, which is compared to bread. And through the preparation of these 44 days that conclude on Rosh Chodesh Sivan, and after there's this nullification that comes first to the Almighty that occurs on Rosh Chodesh, because that's the moment of the birth of the moon that comes after the moon has disappeared, has become nullified. This gives us the power to absorb the 50th gate, which is the level of God's essence that transcends the world, and to absorb it within the parameters of the person and the world itself. There's an additional reason why Rosh Chodesh Sivan is connected to Matan Torah, and that's rooted in the fact that that's when we start counting the 45th day of the Omer. 45 is the numerical value of the word Adam. Dam, blood, which is 44, expresses, as we said before, the perfection of the correction of the person, just like blood that flows throughout the entire body. And in Torah, there are certain laws that are geared to correcting and perfecting the person. That's why the Torah is compared sometimes to blood, whereas Adam, which has the word Dam plus the letter Aleph, that hints that the Aleph, the one utterance, the level of godliness that transcends the world, has actually permeated and extended into the world through one's bittul, one's nullification to God, which is what Rosh Chodesh symbolizes. We can also find these two things in Bahar B'Chukosai, namely the focusing on the details of the world and the unity with that aspect of God that transcends the world. The word Bahar, in the mountain, a mountain is referred to as the level of Tzemeach, vegetation within the inanimate, because every one of the four levels of inanimate, vegetation, animal, and people have a intermediate level between it and the level above it, because a mountain protrudes and juts out of the earth, and it indicates the idea of growth going from one level to another. That corresponds to working within the world, growth, and constantly changing and elevating, going higher and higher. Bechukosai, which comes from the word engraved, just like the letters of the tablets were engraved and unified with the tablets, unlike writing where the ink is separate from the paper in which you write, that represents the indivisible point that cannot be divided, and it transcends details. And the way to reach that very exalted level is through observing the laws of the Torah without any questions, total bittul. The fact that we're reading in one Shabbos both Parshas, Bahar B'chukosai, and the person who gets the fourth Aliyah begins the end of Bahar and concludes in the Parsha B'chukosai that unifies the two Parshas, that instructs us that even when we deal with the details of the world, it is permeated with the central point that is beyond division and beyond details. Also, we find in Parshas Bahar, we find this unification, because the word Sinai has the numerical value of sulam, ladder. A ladder has rungs that connect the upper and the lower. Parshas B'chukosai has a hint in the words V'hisalachti, and I will go, which indicates the traveling and the journeying from level one level to another through prayer, and bringing the highest levels down through Torah. So these two forms of halicha, of going, which is hinted in the word V'hisalachti, two forms of going, are similar to the two stages in the creation of the world. The one utterance that is elevating the world and nullifying the world, that's through prayer, and the 10 utterances, which is bringing godliness into the specifics and the details of the world through Torah. And the Rebbe continues to show that these two patterns can be found also in the word Midbar, the Parshas Bamidbar. The word Midbar is related to the word Dibur, speech, and speech can take the form of either Torah study, which is bringing divine wisdom into the world, going downward, or it could be the speech of tefillah, of prayer, which is an expression of elevation, rising above this world. The word midbar also has both directions in it. On one hand, midbar can come from the expression midaber, someone who's speaking. When you're talking about a person who's speaking, that expresses his own identity, his own importance with his speech, especially if it's speech of Torah study, to such an extent that when a person studies Torah, it is said that the Holy One, blessed is He, is sitting and learning opposite Him. So there's a great virtue associated with the study of Torah that enhances your identity. Conversely, the word midbar also comes from an expression that means that it was already spoken, that God already had spoken. Just like when we pray, that we ask God to open up our lips so we can just repeat God's words. My mouth will relate your praise as if it's going to happen by itself. God is going to put those words in my mouth. That's learning in a manner of total self-abnegation, where you're completely devoted to and surrender your own identity and ego to God. This is the level of Torah that transcends the world. And the unification, the fusion of these two levels is accomplished by a third element. When we talk about the midbar, the desert, that's a level that is completely unrelated to any human being and above them, just like the desert itself is not a place where anyone would live. And this level has the ability to unify the two levels of Torah, the Torah that is above, the transcendent level of Torah, that it should permeate and become one with the person who's studying Torah, with his understanding, with his seichel, his intellect, and even with the chidushim, the novel ideas that a person through his own understanding will introduce. They are all permeated with this higher dimension of Torah. In order to prepare properly for Matan Torah, for the giving of the Torah, we first have to read the Parsha of Bahar and B'chukesai, because there it stresses that there are two extremes. Bahar, the mountain, which juts out of the ground, represents the identity of the person, of the world, and all of its details. B'chukaisa, which comes from a root which means that which is engraved and etched within something, that represents the complete self-nullification to that aspect of God that transcends the world. And that's why it says Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, to indicate that there are two different aspects of Torah. Subsequently, right before Shavuos, we read Parshas Bamidbar, which underscores the unification of these two dimensions of Torah, as was explained. Now we can explain very well why the Torah was given specifically in a midbar, in a desert, a place that is hefker, free for all, no owner, and not in a public domain that belongs to everyone. A public domain symbolizes the level of Torah that is related to everyone, to the world. It's a level that relates to the public and to all of the children of Israel, because that's what a public domain is. A real public domain, actually, according to Jewish law, is a place where 600,000 people traverse every day, corresponding to the 600,000 general souls of the Jewish people who were present at Matan Torah, who were there in the desert. So this midbar, which is not a public domain, it's a place that is free for all, symbolizes the Torah that is beyond the world, that can't, by its own, relate to the world, to people, to the public, because this Torah level is one with the Creator. But God says, I'm going to make this level as well free for all, that everyone could access it, whoever wants to take ownership of it. And that's why the Torah was given in a desert, in order to clarify that in order to receive the Torah in its fullest sense, without any compromise, you have to accept also that level of Torah that transcends the world. And in order to be receptive to that, to have had to make it hefker, make it free for all. And this complete way of giving the Torah, which is the Torah that is above the world, that will become fully manifest with a complete redemption. As it says, Torah Chadasha Mi'iti Teitzei, a new dimension of Torah will emerge from me, me meaning God himself, who transcends the world. And Teitzei, it'll come out, as it were, from God to a state of Hefker, to free for all, whoever wants will be able to receive it. And therefore, only when the Jewish people came to Midbar Sinai, then they reached the time of the giving of the Torah, because then the Jewish people were like Ish Echad B'Lev Echad, like one person with one heart. Then they reached complete peace and unity, despising Machlokes, despising discord, and loving peace. Since we said that in order to reach the level of Torah, the transcendent level of Torah that transcends the world, you have to be in a state of bittul, of self-abnegation, how does that manifest itself? How is that expressed? That's expressed with unity. Because where does dissent and discord and fights come from? It comes from ego. And that's why when the Jewish people came to Midbar Sinai and they were in a total state of unity, that means they were in a state of bittul, of self-abnegation, that was the appropriate time for the receiving of the Torah. But the caveat to this is, after you have and experience this bittul, this self-abnegation, the person has to receive the Torah. And it becomes one with him, and it becomes part of his identity. So then, that level of Torah, even that level, that is above the person, will permeate throughout the entire person's identity. And this is underscored in the Parsha Bamidbar. Midbar is bittul, self-abnegation, like a physical desert. Everyone could traverse and step on it. And the whole Parsha, what does it talk about? It talks about the counting of the Jewish people, which indicates how strong and how important they are, the Jewish people as a whole and every individual Jew. These two extremes are underscored also and alluded to in the two reasons why we read Parshas Bamidbar before the festival of Matan Torah. One reason is because the Torah was given in the desert. That underscores the idea of bittul, of self-abnegation. The second reason is in order to separate between the curses that were read in Parshas B'chukaisai and the festival. We shouldn't go straight from the curses to the festival. So that underscores the idea of blessing, and that Torah is the source of blessing, source of all blessings, including the blessing of the true redemption that takes place through the person's identity, through his metzias, that we have the power to block all the different breaches and all the different barriers that stand in the way of the redemption, and to bring the Aleph, which is reference to God himself, and into the word Gola, and thereby transform it from Gola to Geula, from exile to redemption. There are two things that have to be done now. Number one, we have to gather Jews to study Torah, to learn Torah in the synagogues, in the houses of study, on Shabbos, especially the Shabbos before Matan Torah. Number two, to see to it that during the reading of the Torah and the festival of the giving of the Torah, all Jewish children, even little babies, should be present in the shul. And here also we have these two extremes, bittul and the strong identity. On one hand, everyone has to surrender his own ego and become one with other Jews by listening to the Torah in a group setting, in a community setting, especially the Ten Commandments, the Ten Statements. Then we become unified with everyone, including little children. That's the idea of bittul, surrendering our ego. On the other hand, together with the self-nullification and the unity, we underscore and stress that everyone receives the Torah and learns the Torah and understands it personally and can even be mechadish chedushim, introduce novel ideas according to each person's capacity, which represents the strength of one's identity, and the two are fused together. The central thing the Rebbe says is that there should be a resolution to increase in Jewish unity as a preparation for the festival of giving the Torah. That will bring about elimination of the golus, of the exile, and the true and complete redemption will come through our righteous Mashiach, who will teach the entire Jewish people this new dimension of Torah that will come from God. Simple terms, this means that in Shabbos Mevarchim, before the month of Sivan, the Shabbos in which we read the Parsha Bahar B'chukesai, we should see the fulfillment of the narrative that is mentioned at the beginning of Parshas Bahar, quote, Kisavaru el Haaretz, when you enter the land of Israel, that's the beginning of Parshas Bahar, and the beginning of Parshas B'chukesai, the Torah says, and the earth will give its yield, and the trees will produce their fruit. And as our sages say, that is a reference to the fact that the trees will produce ready-made cookies and silk garments, and even trees that are non-fruit-bearing will produce fruits, and this will all happen with a true and complete redemption. And afterwards we'll reach the Parsha Bamidbar, which relates how we counted the Jewish people, and that alludes to the fact that every Jew is counted, he will be taken out of Golus and brought to a state of redemption, because Tekef Miyad, immediately and imminently, we'll see how Mashiach is amongst us, and everyone will be able to point to him and say, Zeh Melech HaMashiach, this is the King Mashiach. And then we will celebrate the festival of Matan Torah in the Beis HaMikdash and in the Holy of Holies, together with the tablets, and we'll hear this new dimension of Torah from Melech HaMashiach and from God himself in his own glory and essence, take it from Yad Mamish, imminently. A summary of the synopsis. By learning Torah, we reveal the 10 utterances in the world. That means that the world is not a separate, independent existence. Its whole existence is the divinity that is present in the 10 utterances that give the world existence out of nothingness. And there are two ways that this manifests itself. One way is through the bittul, by self-abnegation, surrendering our egos to the one who gave the Torah, and the recognition that the Torah is one central point, it's God's wisdom. And by doing that, we reveal that the world itself is nothing. It's only the manifestation of God's essential power. And number two, by learning all the details of the laws of the Torah, we accomplish that every aspect of the world itself will be permeated with a divinity and holiness of the divine. And in each one of these two approaches, there's an advantage that the other one doesn't have. That's why we have to have the fusion of these two approaches together, that God's power should permeate all the different details and the divisions within the creations of this world. And the Rebbe then says that all this is underscored in the counting of the Omer, where we reveal God's essence in each individual attribute. of the person and of the world. And this is especially stressed in the sphere of Rosh Chodesh Sivan, and it's hinted also in the Parsha Bahar B'chakayse. Bahar, a mountain, is representative of a person's metzias, his identity. B'chakayse, which comes from the word engraved, represents the idea of bitl, of nullification, that which is higher than division. In Parshas B'midbar, a midbar, which comes from the word medaber, the one who speaks, indicates the person's ability to speak, to express himself. But midbar is also desert, which indicates the bitl, the self-nullification of the person, and since they're both part of one word, they are unified together. That's why we read these parshas before the festival of Matan Torah, when we stress, first of all, the two extremes in Parshas Bahar B'chukesai, and in Parshas B'midbar, we stress how they are unified and they are essentially one. This is the reason why the Torah was given in a place that is hefker, that is free for all, because free for all indicates an aspect of Torah that is beyond having a connection to the world, and the Torah was not given in a public domain because that represents the Torah that relates to the public, relates to the world. The reason for this is to indicate that what is considered to be receiving the Torah in its fullest and most complete sense, when you receive that level of Torah that is above having a connection to the world, and in order to express that, the Torah was given in a place that doesn't relate to the world, a place that is hefker, free for all. And this full aspect of receiving of the Torah will be manifested completely in the time of redemption. And the Rebbe says, the hamaisa hu ha'ikar, the deed is the central thing, and the Rebbe gives three instructions: to gather Jews on Shabbos, especially the Shabbos before Matan Torah. Number two, to inspire and to arouse people to the fact that all Jewish children should be present when they read the Ten Statements, so-called Ten Commandments. And number three, to increase in unity. And some highlights from the talk that we just reviewed. Through fulfilling all of the above, we fulfill the whole purpose of creation, that God desired to have a dwelling place in the lowest of worlds. A dwelling place means that that's where your whole essence is revealed, not just an aspect of godliness that is related to the world, but also an aspect of godliness that transcends the world, including God's very essence, total unity, which is expressed by the Maimer Echad, the one declaration with which God could have created the world. And this dwelling place is B'tachtenim, in the lowest of spheres, that the revelation of God's essence extends to and permeates the very identities of the lowest aspects of creation as they stand in a state of division, and each one has his own identity, his own composition. In simple terms, the Rebbe says, before we even reach the time of the giving of the Torah, before Rosh Chodesh Sivan, as we stand in the Shabbos Mevarchim of the month of Sivan, when we read the Parsha Bahar B'chukesai, we already merit to see the fulfillment of the promise and the story that is mentioned in the beginning of Parshas Bahar, Ki Sevayu El Haaretz V'Gomer, when you will enter the land, and so on. And right after that, we come to the book of Bamidbar called Pikudim, the book of counting, which includes the counting of the Jewish people, including and up to the 10th counting, together with the 10th song and the 10th red heifer, which is 10 is always holy, that will happen through HaMelech HaMashiach, who will be revealed very speedily. Amen, Kenya Hiratzen, may this be the will. In other words, take it from Yad Mamish, literally, immediately, imminently, we will see that Mashiach is already amongst us, and every one of us will point with his finger and say, Hine Zeh, behold, this one, who is this one? HaMelech HaMashiach, King Mashiach, Ukvarba, and he had already come.